Just to clarify, it wasn't an appointment with Mr. Miliband. I was invited to a reception evening with, and Ed Miliband was a special guest, and the ex-Archbishop Rowan Williams. And I thought, I'm not going to stand Lindis up. And there are far, far more important people and better company, and that's you guys. And I mean that because this whole event is about standing up for what's right. We just had a great songs choir there saying peace. It's not just about what we're against, it's what we stand for. And it's so important that we do come to gatherings like this to affirm what's right and what's good, and that we're not alone. So I don't apologise for the fact that I'm actually here for my own personal therapy to be in good company right now. You know, so I'm a psychotherapist by background, but hope is a four-letter word these days. They want us to feel despair. This idea of full-spectrum dominance is not just military, it's psychological. It's to say, don't you even think about going against us. And it's that psychological dominance and that thing of, there's no point, is there? They're so strong. They're so powerful. What's a bunch of us not going to achieve? But do you know what? They're not scared of the Taliban. They know they haven't got the means to overthrow America or the UK. They're not scared of those people. This war on terror is a war of terror. They're actually scared of people like you and me. All the billions of communications that right behind us that they're listening in on, it's about monitoring the world because they don't want people to have real democracy. You know, a few years ago, I thought, is this conspiracy theory stuff? But everything that we've seen in the last decade is really about unmasking what has been there. And actually, they're becoming more and more shameless whilst they go about it. These weapons of mass destruction that they employ, alongside their weapons of mass destruction. You know, after all these billions in their so-called intelligence network, it wasn't very intelligent, was it? I mean, if it was about security, we had 9/11 happening. We had Iraq being invaded because they said the intelligence said there were weapons of mass destruction, which they were not. A whole country devastated, a whole region devastated. I mean, the figures alone can't give us the real cost in human terms. When we talk about millions of people displaced, hundreds of thousands widowed, kids orphaned, depleted uranium used, the whole country broken apart, sectarian division actually fostered very deliberately. It's always, oh God, you know, the Shias and Sunnis, they're never going to get on. No, it's political. You know, they do this very, very deliberately. And because they're actually scared of democracy. They don't want people living their lives in freedom. Because then the 1% can't control the 99%. And before, you know, I used to think about solidarity abroad. Because that's important. And I became active in the anti-war movement after 9/11. You know, I was that generation which thought, you know, we've got women's rights, we've got peace, everything's good. Because that, you know, we'd seen the Berlin Wall come down, Nelson Mandela had come out. You know, that the victory had happened. And so 9/11 for me was a real wake-up call. That really is my government going to kill thousands of innocent people using my taxes to send bombs from my country to a war which is actually going to make the situation worse, not better. And I went to my MP, who at that time was Claire Short, and I thought, no, she's one of the good ones, you know, a lefty. And I was told, you don't know about Afghanistan. I've read this book, I know about Afghanistan. That was the response at that time. And the anti-war movement began with 10 people, then 20, then 100. And I didn't know how to organise anything in those times. And the mosque was so scared, they wouldn't let anybody talk about the issue because I was told, even by people like my dad, bless him, you know, Muslims can't speak up now. They'll think that we're all supporting the Taliban, you know, and you're a traitor and, you know, they lock us up. And we've seen what happened in Bosnia a decade before, you know, with how Muslims had been treated there. It's a time to stay quiet. And I thought, yes, that is an easier option. And my kids, I've got three kids now, but at that time I had two little ones. I thought, yeah, it is easier to stay quiet. And the gun's not on my head directly. But there are women on the other side of the world who are going to have their homes blown apart, who don't have a voice in a free country, like ours. And the very least I can do is speak up. I don't know what the result will be, but at least I have to express that solidarity. And I'm so glad I did. It was scary at times, but it became bigger and bigger. And we didn't know then how big it was going to become. But within a few years, we saw the biggest ever demonstrations that this country's had in 2,000 years of its history, when we saw the 2 million march. But that was on the back of lots of other demos that the media, of course, didn't report. I actually think the police always told the truth. So after those demos, and they kind of put 1/10 of the number, I thought, oh. And I thought when they did a press release, the media would kind of promote it. I thought, oh. And I thought when we had all these polling done and the politicians would reflect what the people felt. I thought, oh. And so I've had a political awakening. But my hope is not in the political establishment. It's in people like yourselves. Because this is the other superpower. This is what they're scared of. They want to make you feel small, but actually you are very big. Conscience is very, very powerful. And you know, I was so disappointed that the great anti-war protest didn't stop the war. I wish it had. But don't underestimate what it did do. Because I still get letters from places like Iraq and Palestine where people say it mattered so much that the British people showed that they cared. Because you know, when you're in pain, even if somebody shows the care, it helps, doesn't it? It's worse when you're kind of in pain and you're getting kicked and nobody cares. So solidarity in itself, that's what's important. That's why I'm here. Because Lindis is important to me. Because when Lindis asked, I thought, I can't not be there. Because I know, unlike me, living in Birmingham, you guys, CARB, lots of people here, come every week to this place as witness to the truth. And that's powerful. I imagine it must feel lonely at times. And, you know, I feel lonely at times when you think, oh, are we getting anywhere? And that's why it's important that we join together wherever possible. But the world is a smaller place now as well. And these kinds of actions do reach far. And people's hearts are touched. Because whenever you do something good, it cannot be a failure. It cannot. You know, sometimes you don't see the results right in front of us. You know, we all want that, don't we? But that's not the bigger prize. Even the people that we heard about in Guantanamo, some of amazing. Some have been psychologically broken, it's true. And I've met with some of the families, because there are some people in Britain still whose loved ones are in Guantanamo. But some have shown amazing fortitude and they've actually even inspired their own guards over there. So these stories of humanity are still very, very powerful. And I know that the fact that you are here today talking about their pain will reach them. Because their lawyers talk to them, I'm talking to their lawyers. These things do, because sometimes, is it gone in a vacuum? No, nothing good goes in a vacuum. And the reason why they have places like this is because they want to keep listening and finding out more and more. You know, we found about Stephen Lawrence's family. They'd lost a son, murdered by racists. What was our institution's response? Let's spy on the family so we can get any dirt on them so that we don't get embarrassed. There wasn't humanity about they've lost a son, so let's get the killers. And what do they do? Spy. And the fact that we've had CND and anti-racist groups and all groups around civil liberties infiltrated by the police who are supposed to serve and protect us. That's what they tell us, don't they? We do all this so that you guys are safe. But guess what? We're not safe from them. Because I do believe in people. I believe that, yes, we're all capable of good and bad, including myself. You know, none of us is perfect. I don't think any of us are pure evil. I just don't believe that. But when we encourage the good in each other, that's what's important. And that's what's dangerous to politicians who like to almost inflate the bad. They want to keep us in fear. They want to tell you Muslims are the enemy. No, we're not. The line is about oppression. And if a Muslim is an oppressor, they're my enemy. And if a non-Muslim is oppressed, they're my friend and it's my duty to help. It's not that complicated. And I think organisations like this and gatherings like this highlight that. And that's not what they want. They want to divide. And now even in our own country, you know, we don't like to use these terms, but I think it's a class war. The wars come here. Before it was just about the nasty stuff that went on over there. Our power and might was used in ways to uphold the mighty in countries abroad. But, we had kind of a softer version here. It wasn't that bad. But now it's becoming more and more blatant. They start with disabled people, those scroungers. And now I've seen the hatred, how people are feeling vilified. My husband's a GP and he's telling me about people coming in tears to his surgery saying that they've been called names in the street. Because hatred can be successful as well, because it's an easy thing. You don't have to think about it. It's an emotive thing. And then they start on immigrants. They start on older people. Oh, gosh, they're a burden on the NHS. Well, guess who created the NHS? And then it's young people. Oh, no, these young people, the problem. They're our future. We should be nurturing them. Love, compassion. These are not old-fashioned things. These are timeless things. But they try to get all of that out. So don't be naive. The real world's just about your monetary value. No, it's not. And there's many, many people who know it's not, but they want to keep that quiet. They want to make it seem as it's inevitable what they're doing is right, but it's not. So I really, really want to thank you. There's people like Edward Snowden who have left everything. His girlfriend, his home, he had a cushy job, $200,000 a year, I read. And he knew what he was taking on. And he did it so that we could act. The politicians are not going to act unless we do. The media is not going to act unless we do. They're all looking at, can we get away with it? That's what it's about. It's like with austerity. Mervyn King, he said, I'm surprised there's not more outrage. And the bankers brought the country to its knees and not one single banker's been jailed still. And we're told that there's no choice but austerity, which is a load of rubbish. That was another mass distraction, which they got away with. Because sadly, the opposition who should be speaking up and putting forth alternative narrative has not. They made the crisis of the private sector, crisis of the public sector. Because it's about values. What's the public sector stand for? That any of us could get ill at any time. Any of us may need a hand at any time. And we have a collective conscience and we support each other. We're not embarrassed about that. We're glad about that. It makes us human. Last night there was a science program on and it just was making me think about these things. Because they had this thing about what makes us different from our nearest animal relatives, apes. And they said they did this experiment with young kids, literally toddlers. And they said they had an instinct to share. Because you think it's the other way around, we get id and that actually little ones, they have this selfish thing. But actually said that ape kids, they don't share. If they have a chance, they'd hoard. And so, one would be the loser and one would be the winner. But when they played the similar game with toddlers, human toddlers, the instinct was actually to divide it out. And I thought it was really interesting because actually what they're doing is so unnatural with the way they're ordering the world where you have a few winners and everybody else are the losers. And they set up these systems to keep us apart so that we cannot all stand up together. And the answers were in the choir. People saying, what are the answers? Unity is an answer. Hope is an answer. Love is an answer. Not settling is an answer. Justice is an answer. But there can never be peace without justice. And it cannot have justice without equality. What you want for yourself, want for your neighbour. Is that complicated? Is that rocket science? Does it take trillions? And for all this stuff that's going on, and it breaks my heart that in this beautiful place, which seems so peaceful, that that's where they can send with just press of a button, drones from the other side of the world to places like Pakistan, where thousands have lost their lives. Is that going to bring peace? They say we're taking out the militants. When you kill people who have not got an argument with you, do you think they will not have an argument with you? Of course, we're increasing the threat of terror when we have this so-called war on terror. So it amazes me that the amount of brain power, from Harvard and God knows where they get these analysts and they've got thousands of them and paying, I think, $5 billion alone just here to employ all these people to analyse all this data. And what do they come out with? What do they come out with? Jackanories. Yeah, that's the back, the 1980s kid there, Jackanory. Yeah, I remember that. And so, no, you know, we've got to stand and say, you know what, we're right. You're wrong. And be firm in that. And be patient in that. And not lose hope ourselves. And Lindis, I'm sorry to keep singling you out, but you're a hero. You're a hero to me. Yeah. And history won't name every person who was part of the struggle. But the struggle is what's important. I wouldn't be standing here today if some women hadn't struggled in the suffragette movement in this country, so that women could have a say and have a right. And they were force-fed too, yes. Or could be, you know, the politicians centuries later, they all say, we stand for this right and we stand for that right, and isn't it great? You know, they're the very people who imprison, force-feed, call them terrorists, call them extremists, call them mad, bad, all the rest of it. So count it as a badge of honour when they try to put you to one side. It shows you're doing something right. Sorry? Force-fed by the BBC, that's a whole other story. Yeah. Talk about the BBC, that I was asked by This Week to be on tonight, but again, I thought, date with Lindis. It's going to happen. So you know what? Be happy. Be happy that you're in good company. Be happy that you're on the right side. Because sometimes it is okay to talk about right and wrong. That's another thing, trying to like say, oh no, we don't want that. Well, actually no, right is important. And might is not right. Might is not right. Justice is right. How we treat the weakest of us and the most vulnerable amongst us is a measure of our humanity, is a real measure of our strength. So stay strong and keep carrying on. Thank you very much.